Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
So when Noah and I, sometimes we talk during the week to say... Let's figure out what we want to do on the show this week, and Noah and I had a conversation maybe Wednesday of this past week. I think that's about right. It's been a rough couple of weeks for Noah. I haven't been doing well for maybe like 25, 30 years. But we just talked about this idea of let's try to focus on some positive things, some positive thoughts, kind of what, you know, the positive things about tennis. And then we wake up a couple days ago.
it's not a laughing matter, and you know, we hope everybody's safe, but it just keeps hitting the fan.
But thank you again for joining us on the Behind the Racket pod. I have a couple Patreon users that I need to add here, Noah. Do you mind?
Cheers.
Cheers
my Pedialyte.
You're having some Pedialyte. I'm having a rum and Diet Dr. Pepper. But let's run through these Patreons.
Rum and Diet Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, I call it the...
Oh my God.
I actually call it the Captain Doctor.
The Captain Doctor.
or Dr. Captain, whichever you prefer. So let's run through these Patreons before I lose Noah. Thank you to Michael Donatelli, new sponsor for us at the $2 level. Somebody you and I are quite familiar with, Regina Cortina. Yes. Of course, an incredible photographer, does a lot of great work, just a fantastic person. She has joined us as well as a Patreon supporter. Connor Mogul, who outside of you is actually my biggest supporter on the Twitch streets. So I appreciate Connor, and then we just got one yesterday on the 4th of July, Israel Moore from down in Brazil, which is possibly the only country that is having a worse response to COVID than us, potentially.
Yeah, but we really appreciate it because, you know, like we said, it's been a tough couple of weeks, and the Patreon, it's nice to get, you know, that support, you know, not less about the dollar figure, which we don't mind, but more about the understanding that you guys appreciate what we do, and we appreciate that during these kind of times.
I think we should also point out, you know, we do have listed on our Patreon page, patreon.com/behindtheracketpod, some of the benefits that come along with being a Patreon sponsor. It appears that Noah and I are going to be in the same vicinity over the next couple of weeks.
Which is scary for everyone involved.
But at that point, I do believe we're going to try to get some of those things taken care of. So hopefully those of you that have been supporting us, we will be able to get some of those things out to you.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Let's get to the business at hand. We wake up a
positivity. Oh, no, sorry.
No, neither one of us believe in that. Listen.
I try to.
I know. So Francis Tiafoe, somebody you and I both love very much,
yes.
Testing positive after playing a match in Atlanta at the DraftKings, whatever, All-American Super Bowl challenge thing.
Stars, stripes.
Yeah. I obviously went on quite a bit of a tirade. If you follow me on Twitter, Mike C Tennis on Twitter, and I have two things I need to really get off my chest here, Noah. Two directions I want to take this. Number one, obviously you and I are both thinking very much about Francis. On top of the fact that the likelihood of Francis having really difficult complications from this is obviously very minimal, right? I know he's been with his family recently. His mom celebrated a birthday, I believe, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago maybe. But his brother, his parents, who I've gotten to know over the years, the story, but behind that family coming to the U.S. and his dad getting the job there at JTCC. I mean, it just incredible story. But that's who I'm thinking about. Those people. That being said, we have to have a little bit of personal responsibility here, right? And that's a real difficult thing to say to somebody you and I both love and care about. But if you're not feeling well at this point, right, and you're engaged in a sporting event, you have to you have to step forward and say, I might not be feeling well. And there's that aspect, and I'm sure Francis is going to learn from that. I'm a little disappointed we haven't learned from what we saw at the Adria Tour to get better with that necessarily. But that's the personal responsibility thing.
Yeah, I don't want to interrupt you.
You're fine.
My problems stem one from the testing, and I could be wrong on this. I saw a little bit about this. Was there was testing before the tournament, but not during it, and I'm just like, you can't half-ass it right now.
Yeah, and that's
the thing.
That leads me to my second point, Noah.
Yes, please.
And this is kind of more the big picture. I don't want to spend too much time hashing out all the details of exactly what happened in Atlanta. My understanding is that the majority of the people who are involved, players, coaches, did get tested on Thursday. However, it was not a tournament saying, you will come in, we will get you tested. It was up to them in some way, shape, or form. Francis took a test while he was in Florida before he came to Atlanta. The assumption was that he had taken this test, and I know he interacted with the other players. We are at this crucial time, right, where we're trying to work our way back towards getting the sport up and running again in some form. I understand that the people in charge of what they did of the DraftKings event were trying their best to put on a good show. Show that tennis can be in front of fans.
That's different. Can we preface that we knew they didn't want anybody to get COVID? We get that.
But you lose all credibility if you're not going to follow the protocols and require your athletes to get tests in front of you on site. You lose all credibility. John obviously did a disservice, I think. I know he was intending to push this narrative of it being a safe event and all that. Right. I get it. But he did himself a disservice by promoting all of that. And then you have a player who suddenly didn't actually get tested. You can't have that. Regardless of what happens afterwards, and we are certainly hoping and praying that nobody else gets sick. I know that all of the other competitors and coaches who interacted with Francis have been tested either once or twice since then. So far, everything's okay. But you can't go into this half-assing it. There's too much at stake for too many people. The problem I have with this, the intentions were fine. I get it. Everybody's trying to do their best to help bring the sport back. But there is not a universal guideline here. And I am upset and frustrated that these people in Atlanta are having an influence on whether the sport comes back. The fact, there are plenty of people who said to me when I was talking about this on Twitter, you know, what are we supposed to do? What does it matter? It's not like the ATP or WTA has any. Okay. Yeah, they do in some way, shape, or form. This is put on by the same people who put on the Atlanta ATP. If they're not going to follow a set guideline here, right? If the ATP were saying we have to do this, there's something that's tied to that. It is crucial right now for somebody with the ATP. I'm not going to bring in the WTA because so far, not a single fucking problem from the women. Not a single fucking problem. It's been an ATP issue. The ATP needs to step in and say, listen, this is how things are going to run for the next 6 to 7 weeks before the tour comes back, because it's only 6 weeks. If you want to do one of your fun exhibitions so that you can make some money, sell the broadcasting rights, the gambling money that comes along with this is what you've got to do, because we need the sport to get back. There are players like Noah, different challenger level players, who are counting on the sport coming back next month. And if you have some stupid PR blunder because of this, because of Adria, it's costing hundreds of people who are players. It's costing hundreds of people who are support staff paychecks because you are selfish and taking a money grab. Fucking follow some fucking rules. I'm so tired of it. This individualistic bullshit. There needs to be a group thinking here about what's good for the collective whole. There's not right now, and somebody needs to be a fucking leader. And let me just say this, because I pointed out that I think it needs to be the ATP who steps forward. You know who could be really fucking crucial right now? And you're going to roll your eyes and...
Let's hear it.
Novak. This is where the president of the ATP Player Council could be a massive, massive leader here and say, listen, if we want to have tennis moving forward, we need to have a set group of rules about how it's going to happen on these exhibitions, and just say, listen, we need to make sure all of you are tested, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. 1, 2, 3, 4. List all these things that have to happen before you can compete in an exhibition. And nobody is stepping forward into that void. So as a result, we already have complained time after time, you and I know about how there are these seven entities that have so much power. Now you are wielding that power to somebody in Atlanta, to, on a more positive note, Jamie Murray in the Battle of the Brits, to people who are running things down, Harry Sikma down in Bradenton every week. These are all good people who are trying to do their best, but they shouldn't have fucking power right now. They shouldn't have power. They should not have this power when our sport is trying to come back and so many people have so much at stake. I'm sorry. End rant. Go.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, I just look at it in a smaller scale, and there's just things that shouldn't even be a discussion right now. You know, we talk about the, you know, for somebody who's healthy at the age of 25, at the age of 30, you know, it's limited. You know, we understand it's asymptomatic or it's just very limited, but you're putting fans in the mix, you're putting kids, elders, anywhere in that vicinity. The problems are there. And what I'm sick and fed up with is, again, half-ass, almost apologies where it's not really apologies, where I'm going to now wear a mask in the interviews now when we didn't do that 2 days ago. And I'm like, that's your apology. That's your way of overcoming the situation. We see it. You know, this highlights, you know, everything we talk about. There's too many moving parts. There's no power at the top, really, to tell everybody to do what they have to do. I mean, I've spoken to the ATP. They say, we don't know what to do at this point. There is nothing to do. So we understand that there's, you know, tournaments and people that are bigger than the sport, and that's what we have to deal with right now. So, I mean, this could easily put the US Open in jeopardy. just like the rest of the schedule. I mean, the challengers right now seems bleak, but we're just going to have to wait and find out.
I would like to see. I understand the USTA obviously has put forward their policy for the Open specifically. And obviously the challenger calendar is now out for August and September. Mm-hmm. I would like to see, if we have a USTA policy for the Open, that needs to be mandated for the French, or there needs to listen. That's
yeah,
but that's
good luck.
I know that's yeah. But that's my point, is that you're yeah. having all of this variety of what can and can't happen, and okay, what is a challenger supposed to do, and all of these exhibitions who are, some have fans, some don't. Okay, Atlanta doesn't require and force you to have these testing. It is a cluster. It is bad enough. It is challenging enough right now that we're going to have all of the, we are going to have positive tests at the US Open if it runs. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. going to happen.
Right.
I know the USTA is working and is going to have a plan saying, if one person gets positive, here's how we're going to react. If two get, this, you know, we can't just have some half-ass like, okay, well now we got to wear a mask and we're going to clean everything. What?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, great. You know, that's good, but
you need a true contingency plan. But even, you know, and again, the Open, they're working their asses off. I mean, tirelessly working their asses off. But you think about it, you don't see symptoms, let's say up to 14 days, people can go home just like that with, you know, with carrying whatever they're carrying, and that's it, without even knowing it. It's scary. And it's scary to see that we're still taking shortcuts in a time like this. This, you know, you're talking about a time that this would be the complete opposite of that. And it would be, it's not brain surgery to come up with five simple rules to run an exhibition that must take place.
Yep.
I've literally been, you can ask my friends and everybody else. I'm super discouraged. Last week it started happening to a point where I was like, this is it. Everybody's trying to do their own thing. I'm like, you don't understand that there's nowhere to go. There's no formula to compete against these seven entities, because they don't even know what they're doing amongst themselves. So where do we go from here? And that's why we spoke on Wednesday about, at least this is taking a little longer than we wanted, but at least going into a little bit of what tennis has brought into our lives and go through a couple of my favorite matches over my lifetime.
Okay. Let me say a last couple of things here.
Yeah.
Before we get into the positive. I have had two people in the last week who I've just had DMs on Twitter and things like that, who have been inside the business, who are now getting out because they've just been so disheartened.
Mm-hmm.
I now know a couple of people. I have not spoken with Francis myself, but I know a couple of people within the sport who have been dealing with the virus. And it is heartbreaking to hear some of these stories of players who are doing their best, who are, you know, one of whom I talked to the other night and is just like, mm-hmm. it's much worse than I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Take it fucking seriously. Think about the greater good here. And I'm so frustrated. I'm so frustrated because there are so many people who have been dependent and reliant on the sport and who have given so much to the sport, given so much of their effort. It doesn't matter if they're top five or top 10 in the world. Doesn't matter if you're a commentator. So many of us have given so much to the sport because we love it. And I don't want to see it just... There's a very small chance for us to get this back and in a good direction here over the next couple of weeks.
A few more wrong turns. Yeah.
Don't let just some, again, people with good intentions, don't let them be the ones who screw this up for all of the rest of us right now. And I implore the leaders of the tour, specifically the ATP, because again, the WTA has been fine. And I really do implore Novak here, step forward. This is the moment where leadership is desperately needed. Do what you can. With that, I turn it over to Noah Rubin to bring some positivity into our lives.
Okay. First match that came to mind, because I literally sat down and I was like, let's think of a couple matches in my career that other people may not know about at all. Not like the, I get it. I broke my shoe and I played Federer once. I get that. You know, we've spoken about that. Who do you think has made my list of three matches that meant the most to me? And this one is based on, I lost a more than a few times in a row to him before finally beating him. Once a top 100 player.
Yoshi?
Nope.
Have you beaten Yoshi yet?
Juniors.
Once a top 100 player.
And this is more than four losses.
Paolo Lorenzi.
Nope.
I don't know.
Frank Dantsevich.
Wow. The legend.
I mean, just smoothing the ball around the court, so left good. And right. So good. So good. Doesn't say a word. So good. Doesn't sweat. Ever.
His hair's perfect.
Perfect. And I had set points 9 different occasions. Could not even get a set off of him. When I beat him in Stockton after I beat Joris Delore.
Oh, Joris Delore is a sexy man. That is a very pretty man.
Let's not get sidetracked here, Michael.
Sorry. I'm thinking positively, though.
That is. We're on the right track. We're definitely getting there. I kid you not, that was a mini Grand Slam win for me. I mean, that was... I felt like I overcame something I never thought I would ever going to overcome in my entire life. I mean, this guy was just the complete opposite of how I play tennis.
Yes, that is true. It looks effortless. Whereas it looks effortless. Max effort all the time.
Max effort. I'm going to pass out, get the stretcher. And he's like, it's 105. And I'm just like, what is this guy doing? And why can't I beat him? He beat me twice in a row in Canada Futures. He was bored. He was bored of me.
Yeah. Well, most of us are.
I'm sorry. It's tough.
Just a
you
force.
Did it again.
It's a force of
you
habit.
You did it again. The negativity.
Go on.
You did it again.
Go on.
It was.
That was set
exciting.
Out of love.
but that was the first match that came to mind in my head, because we could fact check it. I think it was 7 losses in a row. Oh no! Quick fact check.
Yeah.
On the run.
Yeah.
On the run.
Tell us why it's important and what it brought to your life.
Yeah, so like, you know, we go over these matches, and obviously the ones that everybody sees are important. But at the same time, like, you think about the little wins that in tennis players' minds are huge, and they mean so much to you. I mean, I put so much time and effort. You have the number?
Not yet. I'm getting there.
Okay. So much time and effort, and just to play this one person. I'm watching you. I want this number. And then finally, whether it's 4, 5, 6, or 7 losses in a row, five losses in a row to this guy. And then finally, nothing. You know who
6-3 in the third in the quarterfinals, Stockton 2016.
Oh, okay. I didn't even remember. Okay, but that meant the world to me.
Yeah.
Over and over again, losing to somebody, and it's those little wins. And I'm in Stockton, which. Honestly, I have some pretty good memories of, and I just go to the soccer field behind you, and you're like, I did something today. I did something incredible that nobody else cares about,
yeah.
But I care so much about it. I think that has so much to do with tennis.
Meanwhile, I was just upset that Joris Delore was not in the tournament anymore. Okay, match number 2 for you.
Match number 2. And this kind of goes into a little bit of what I've loved about tennis since I was young. And I played a 15 plus H future in Poitiers, France. Mm,
okay.
Qualifying. First round qualies. Mm,
okay.
And I think to qualify, I played Barrère.
Wow. Grégoire Barrère. He was like 16 at the time.
Right. But he was like 400 in the world at the time. So I'm like, I'm playing a guy 400 to qualify. I am the only American in the tournament.
Okay.
So here I am. I'm like, this is like kind of a cool experience. I am the only American here. I'm wearing the flag on my shirt right now.
Yeah.
Young kid coming up. I beat one top 200 player to get to the finals and then lost to David Gez in the finals. But here I am grinding my way through the only American, almost a little bit of culture shock at that point. And you think about that. Think about of any other circumstance in the world where somebody can get that feeling of you're facing every country on your own at that young age. And you did something. Mm-hmm. In the middle of nowhere in Poitiers, France, is beautiful. We're at this Best Western Chateau. It is insane.
Those are two phrases that don't come
that
together.
That should never come together. I have pictures. I will send them to you. I had a BW sign, and it was a 18-hole golf course with a French restaurant. And I'm like, what is this place? And you think, and I think back to these times, and I'm like, I didn't think about anything else. I was just like, how fucking cool is this? How amazing is this experience that I go back to my friends right now, and they ask me what I did this weekend. And I said, yeah, I had a tough loss in the finals in Poitiers, France, to a guy that's 180 in the world.
Yeah.
And they're like, I had my first beer.
They had their first captain doctor.
Their first captain doctor. I really hope not. That would have been it for them. Okay.
Match number three.
Match number three. And this means this actually, and Jamie just recently brought this up, was qualifying for Wimbledon.
Last year.
And
with wins over Michael Moe, Roberto Quiroz, and Yannick Hanfmann, 6-2 in the fourth to get there.
So you have Michael Moe, which I played him exactly first round at Wimbledon the year before and lost to him. And this was kind of a week after where I retired, quote unquote, where I was really basically depressed at that point, didn't want to pick up a racket, didn't practice as much, wasn't in great shape, and I got into Wimbledon. And I remember clearly, sometimes I look back at the pictures, it wasn't that long ago, I got off the court and Jamie's next to me and she's kind of looking for a reaction, but I'm just bent over on my knees, like kind of crying, but not, like, just so many emotions. And I'm like, this is why I play. Like, I am not happy to be at the Bank of England and not playing at Wimbledon. I am not happy that it's 3 out of 5 sets and we're, Yannick and I are both cramping. But I got off the court and I'm like, this is what I fucking worked my whole life for. To qualify at Wimbledon, to play a 3 out of 5 set match and fucking high level tennis. And then to go from the lowest point of my career to a point where I am breaking down because of all the work I put in, not that week before, but the years before. And again, Jamie's looking for a reaction and I can't even muster up anything. And it means nothing to anybody, and all the trolls are going to be like, well, you just qualified. You didn't really do anything. But what that meant to me that day was, I don't even know what to measure it up to. And those are the things that, regardless, if I quit tennis tomorrow, I will be, in 50 years from now, I can easily depict the emotions that went through my head at that point. And that's why I've played tennis since I was 4. And that's what, you know, it's done incredible things.
So that leads to my idea of why I've always loved the sport in terms of the professional perspective, Noah. To me, it's, you know, I love you to death. The likelihood of you being a top 5 player at this point is pretty slim.
Tough one.
For many of the people that I've been lucky enough to watch at the challenger level over the last several years, the chance of them being top 5 or top 10 is, again, extremely slim. What I've loved about this sport is that it brings players opportunities. You qualifying for Wimbledon last year, you winning the Wimbledon juniors when you did. One of the indelible memories of my life in this side of it is James McGee qualifying at the U.S. Open a few years ago.
Unbelievable. I mean,
incredible.
Not to interrupt, but all tennis players felt that.
Yes, absolutely.
For him.
Just this complete, his journey, you know, NC State for a couple of years, being in the 400s for several years, and then making this big push to be in qualies of slams, and then getting that moment. I think about Darian King getting to represent his country at the Olympics. Mm-hmm. opportunity. That's what it's always been about for me, is just that on any given day, even though it might not be likely, you have the opportunity to play against Roger Federer, and that could be the day for you. That could be the day for any of these players. And I cherish that. I cherish watching players grow, develop, and have those moments, Noah. And I'm going to kind of bring this whole thing full circle for us. Mm-hmm. It is why I'm so frustrated right now, because opportunities aren't being presented for someone like yourself. You know, I don't want to use you as a poster boy for anything, although your abs are looking fantastic, so maybe you should be on some more posters. But right now, we have this very, very thin line about whether we're going to be able to offer opportunity to players around the world, players of all rankings, and we can't waste it. You, Bjorn Fratangelo, Darian King, Mohamed Safwat of Egypt, all of you deserve the opportunity. If some do, everyone does. That's what makes the sport so fantastic. And please don't waste this moment. Please don't waste this moment on cash grabs and lax different rules about how we can handle the pandemic, because we need to continue providing the opportunity to everyone.
I want to preface this for people that's, you know, are saying you're the one looking out for yourself and you can stop me whenever you want. And this is no disrespect to your gorgeous girl, Marnie. Mm. But I feel like the players that have been around the Challenger Tour have become, obviously we're more at the friend level, but kids to you in a lot of ways. Sure. And I mean, the moments that you've seen and spent together, whether it's on and off the court, you actually have been there for us, with us, and you've seen and you've gone through it as well personally, and we've been there for you and vice versa. And it's just, you know, that's why we're so passionate. I mean, the moments we spent together, the times at night where I finish against Eubanks at, you know, 10 p.m. at night and we get pizza. We get gluten-free pizza at 11:30 at night. It's the only thing that's open. And, you know, we're just there laughing because, like, what is life? Like, what is all of this? That's why you're so passionate, because it's not just about you. Of course, we all want our own paychecks, but you've been there for us. You've been a part of it. These are your kids. And to see that possibility taken away from them to get that chance, it's saddening. So, you know, there's still always just a little bit of hope in this cynic of a body that I have. But we have to make some real changes and real steps forward to preserve the sport we all love.
Well, let me tell you one other positive that's been really positive on my personal side.
Yes.
For me. And I know you got to spend some time with family this week. You and I both have been pretty strict quarantining over the last several months. And
yes,
a few days ago, my mom came down from Illinois. It's the first person outside of, for my daughter specifically, it's the first person outside of her parents and her step-parent who she's been able to interact with for over 100 days. And I know that's been a universal worldwide thing for so many people, but it has been a joyous few days for us here. What happened in Atlanta got my blood boiling again, but it's been so gratifying and rewarding knowing my mom's put in the hard yards of quarantining and self-isolating herself. I have as well, knowing that we have the ability to interact because of the fact we've put in the hard yards. And it's been such a rewarding few days for me, fun few days. My daughter is over the moon, and that's been great. And I also hope that we, you know, do this all do this responsibly, in smart ways, because obviously we're struggling here in the States continuously. But I my thoughts are with you. I'm excited about seeing you. We're going to try to figure out how we're going to do that in a safe way so that we make sure we're continuing to be healthy and safe ourselves. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing you, interacting with you. I know Marnie really wants to meet you for some god awful reason. And yeah, so all of this is to say, Yeah, I think ultimately, you know, despite my 15-minute rant, both of us care very deeply. We do love the sport, and see so many positives out of it, and so many positives that have come because of it. And man, I'm tired. You know,
we just have to find a way to smile.
I know,
even if it's just a really shitty mohawk.
Oh, it's so nice, though. I
just end it. Just let's.
I can't.
Just end it.
I actually. I'm.
Let's, I think it's over. The podcast is over.
It's. It looks good. It looks like.
I'm about to stop the. I'm about. To
I mean,
stop
it just is kind of wavy.
I have to stop the podcast.
Bye.
Bye.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.